Former White House economist Larry Summers speaks out on debt, default, and more.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson. There's a new deadline when it comes to raising the federal debt ceiling. The Treasury Department has said August 2nd is the day the U.S. will start defaulting on its obligations if the $14.3 trillion national borrowing limit isn't raised. But now, the White House says July 22nd is the magic date for a deal to give Congress time to dot the I's and cross the T's. We're going to talk about that and much more now with Larry Summers. Until late last year, he was the president's top economic advisor. Now he is a professor at Harvard. Larry Summers, welcome to Marketplace.
Glad to be with you.
Well, let me start by asking you about the debate that's going on over the debt ceiling in Washington. Is it keeping you up at night?
No, it's not keeping me up at night because I believe that ultimately reason will prevail. There is no alternative to the government meeting its obligations. My daughters and I may have a disagreement about how much they spend and who should pay for their spending. We don't have the option of not paying the Visa bill.
Do you think that the lawmakers are going to go right up to the limit, though, with the debate?
I wouldn't be surprised if this gets pretty far along. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a moment of tension that served to remind everybody how cataclysmic the consequences would be if there was to be a default, because they want to avoid Lehman Brothers on steroids. But I think it's essentially inconceivable that there will be a default.
Once we get past this debt ceiling debate, what would you advise the president is the next most important economic thing to focus on?
Oh, I think it's got to be job creation and demand. And that goes back to tax policy. That goes back to infrastructure. That goes back to promoting exports. That goes back to promoting business confidence.
You recently called for a new stimulus in the form of a payroll tax cut, but it's been reported over and over again that within the Obama administration, when you were in the administration, you were actually on the side of a smaller stimulus back in 2009.
Not accurately.
That's not true. You weren't pushing for a less than $1.2 trillion
stimulus. No, those reports are not accurate. It was my judgment as an economist that there was no danger of doing too much stimulus and that one should achieve as much stimulus as possible. There were a set of political calculations having to do with what the Congress could accept, which pointed towards the size of the program that was ultimately passed. But the economic advice that I gave was that the stimulus program should be as large as it could be.
Do you think it was too small in the end?
I think in the end we would have been better served if there had been more push to the economy. But the choices that were made in a given political context. And I think given the slender margins of one vote by which the Recovery Act was passed, I suspect an effort to push it to a higher level might well have backfired and resulted in legislation not passing. And at that moment, that would have had catastrophic consequences in terms of depression.
Finally, you're back at Harvard now. Anything you miss about being in the middle of the storm in the administration?
I'm enjoying the fact that you can go a full day when you're not working in Washington without a moment of intense frustration. And that's been very satisfying for me. And I've felt able to keep in close touch with my former colleagues and get my views in there. So I'm very happy with the opportunity I now have to think about longer range questions.
Larry Summers, former head of the National Economic Council, now back at Harvard. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Larry Summers says we have to get real about the role manufacturing jobs will or won't play in America's economic future. You can find his thoughts on that and more at marketplace.org. And let's do the numbers. Stocks are up in overseas trading this morning, but all business is on hold when it comes to the NBA. The lockout has started after players and owners were unable to reach a new deal on salaries and revenue sharing. On Wall Street yesterday, another slam dunk. The Dow closed up 152 points at 12,414.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Manta, connecting millions of small business owners and new customers every day on the web at manta.com. by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And by MassMutual, offering retirement and 401k plans to businesses for more than 60 years. MassMutual.com/retirestrong.
Well, now to the UK, where the government slogan for public spending cuts is, "We are all in this together." Apparently, that includes the royal we. The Conservative government there is now proposing a pay cut for the Queen. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
On the face of it, Her Majesty may not be amused. In the planned financial shake-up, she could receive, in real terms, 10% less than usual from the public purse. By 2015, that might amount to some $56 million a year. A paltry sum when you have five palaces to maintain, a small army of footmen, and a fleet of gilded horse-drawn carriages. But campaigners against the monarchy say, don't be fooled by the new system. Here's Stephen Haseler.
It's a much more complicated and mysterious, that's the word that comes to mind whenever I think of royal finance, it is mystery, than this straight deal would imply.
He says the royal household are funded in many different ways by the state, and he reckons the monarchy costs the British taxpayer $320 million a year, more than double the cost of the Dutch royal family, and eight times the cost of Germany's presidency. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, to Santa Monica, California, where the notorious mobster James Whitey Bulger was recently arrested after years on the run. Well, apparently the $1,100 a month rent-controlled apartment he was living in near the beach has become a hot property. One realtor compared the influx of queries about the apartments to the calls that came in about O.J. Simpson's house. A couple of caveats, though. The rent control will go away when a new tenant comes in. And the $800,000 authorities found stashed in the walls, I'm guessing that will have been removed. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. On Twitter at Jeremy Hobson, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Ah, the Rockies. Fresh air, clear skies, time and space to gather your thoughts. So to the mountains we go, the Aspen Ideas Festival in, of course, Aspen, Colorado. The economy is up for discussion, as will the environment and energy policy. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Mountain High Ideas next time on Marketplace, complete with an audience. That's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.